All right. So I'm going through pull requests this morning and I find a pull request from Perry Vandermeer. Thank you, Perry Vandermeer, for a well-formed pull request. It's really well done. You know, you open up a pull request and you just know if it's a good pull request. And yeah. And there was one. And I merged it. It was very mergeable. But here's what happened. Perry Vandermeer, he posted a pull request description. So I look inside the pull request. There is a... the change is simple. It's basically a one-line change. And it doesn't have any extra changes that are unrelated. In fact, I'm looking at it right now and realizing like somebody could think to move a code comment in a different place to make it more just like uniform. And people often like improve other areas in their pull requests. And I appreciate the spirit of that, but it often makes a pull request harder and more daunting to merge. Anyway, simple change. And then right after that, there is a beautiful test file, a single test file that's been added that tests this change perfectly. Okay. And then I look, the build is passing. It is all green. It's perfect. By the way, thank you, Josh Hanley, for making all the builds pass. And thank you, Crynabone, for doing what Josh, for helping Josh Hanley make all the pull requests pass or make all the builds pass. Okay. And then the description of this pull request is perfect. It opens with this PR fixes the problem described in this discussion and link to the discussion. This is fine, but here's the thing. Often, this is all that is included in a pull request description is like, oh, this is the pull request for this discussion. I hate that. There's even just the difficulty of opening up that discussion in a new tab. But the thing is that I have to like consume the whole discussion back and forth. It's not a discussion is not a pull request description. It is a helpful reference to understand the need and demand and where it came from, but it is not a description of the problem. It is a messy conversation about the problem. So then in this description, he references the discussion, perfect. And then he's got a big, nice headline, a heading, a markdown heading. It's not just a wall of text. It's a markdown heading that says problem. And it's a description of the problem. And there's code is formatted. There's code examples. It's formatted. There's a note formatted. He's using markdown formatting. It's visually pleasing. I love it. Then cause. And then it's a link to a specific line of code that I can read right there. And then a description of like the cause of this problem and then solution. He talks about why he landed on the solution that he landed on. So this is gorgeous. There is more effort put into the description than into the code itself. Maybe, I don't know. There's at least more text in the description than the, and it's a single line of code. He wrote basically an essay for a single line of code change. Caleb, just look at the single line of code. Why do you need the freaking essay? Well, I'll tell you, this is so nice for me to read. And I understand the problem so much better. So here's the thing. What am I doing here? Am I just telling you how great Perry Vandermeer is? Yes, but I'm telling you about setting the tone or leading by example, something that I am good at sometimes and bad at other times. But I have been making a concerted effort to be a better open source maintainer. And what does that mean? A, it means being attentive. It means looking at the pull requests, all of the pull requests, every day. I mean, I don't look at every pull request every day, but I open up the pull requests list every day, and I read through them, and I try to tackle at least one pull request. I try to just put some effort into the wall of pull requests. Admittedly, it is like, it is exhausting. It's like every time I got down to like three pull requests by the end of last week, and now we're back to like 10 or 12. And it just feels like I have to crush like four a day to make this all work. But whatever, that's a story for another time. I'm trying to be a better open source maintainer. How am I doing that? I'm checking pull requests and just being attentive more. I'm reading them. I'm commenting on them. I'm closing ones that I think are bad, that kind of thing. Also, people submit not great pull request descriptions. By default, like the majority are just not what I'm describing here. They're not what I want. So what I do is I turn the pull request into a pull request I would want to receive. So I, like, you could look in the past few weeks and you'd find many of these instances where I do a comment that is this big long essay format of the problem, the explanation, and then propose solutions. It's a big exploration, a big written thing, because I mean, I don't have to sell you on that. If you're here, hopefully you're already sold on that, because it's like my biggest belief in work improvement ever, which is write, blog posts for every little problem, and you will become such a freaking good problem solver and a better decision maker and a clearer thinker. It is a superpower. So I've been doing that on blog posts in response, sort of like, and it's just my way of saying, I mean, A, I need to do it because I need to understand the pull request and I need to think through the solutions, and this is the best way to do it. So that's just the utility of it is there. But also it's me saying, here's like, look at this, look at how much better this is. And inspiring people, right, with my greatness. No, but look at how much better this is. And by doing that, Perry Vandermeer reciprocated. He saw that that's the tone of the repository, and he submitted a pull request with the format that I use and with the detail that I go in. He did that, which is awesome. So it's paying me back. And this is something I've known. I know that this is how it works. If you want people to be better, then you need to be better. You set the tone. Taylor is always my go-to example. He's a great example of this. He is very excellent in everything he does, but specifically the open source world. You know, if you submit something to Laravel, someone's going to look at it. How many pull requests or how many repos are you basically guaranteed to get no response back from? Like a ton. So I've been looking into sorting libraries, and really it's like, what's the sorting library that is even looked at? Like, has there been anything commented by a maintainer in like 4 years? Because that's really like, that's the distinguishing factor with a sortable library, is has the maintainer paid any amount of attention to any contribution in years? You know, and Taylor, you pretty much guaranteed you're going to hear back in a few days, which is unbelievable. He's been doing that forever. So it sets this tone of contribution where people want to contribute because they know it's going to be paid attention to. So they're inspired and they're incentivized to contribute more and better. And that's what I'm trying to do with the LiveWire open source repo. And I've not done that in the past. I've been a Slacker maintainer, where I go on a spree and I crush pull requests and I'm really active. And then a long, dark winter of where I'm working on other crap until it piles up in an unwieldy way, and then I get back to it. And also, Josh, listening to this, Josh Hanley is the one who smooths over all these edges and actually pays attention to people and is just helpful for people. So anyway, I'm trying to channel my inner Josh Hanley. But all this to say that it is so clear to me, and this is an example of being paid back for this, is setting a tone. And so I think an example of this is the Filament community. They have such an incredibly strong community in Discord because they're active in there. I believe, at least they were last I knew. I'm sure that's still the case. So it's possible it's not, but I'm sure it's still the case. That Dan, the head of Filament, and Zep, and all those folks, they are in Discord talking with people every day, I imagine. Because of that, they are really attentive to the needs of people, and people have a lot of love for them because they're real people who are putting in effort and help, you know, every day. And that's, so if you want a strong community, that's something I know. It's like LiveWire does not have a strong Discord. I'm guessing. I'm never, ever on it. And I could, like, do I want a strong community? If I did, I know the answer. And it has to come from the top. You can't just hire somebody to be the, like, community person. Maybe you can. But it doesn't seem like you can for me, at least at this scale. It's like, if you want something, you have to set the tone and lead by example. You can't sit here and go, how come people don't engage more? How come, this is what it is. You can't think, how come more people don't step up? You know, that's what you can't think. How come more people don't step up in the LiveWire repository and see the opportunity to improve their status in the community as a maintainer? You could earn that status by embedding yourself in a project. Like, people do this all the time. There's so many people who've done this with Laravel and then got jobs at Laravel, you know, and have elevated this. Mohammed Saeed, like, you know, so many people like that who've done that. Why don't people see that opportunity with the LiveWire repo? Why is nobody doing that? I mean, Josh Hanley has done that, but Philo too. But like, how come, you know, you can't sit there and ask that. Well, if you want people to step up, you need to reward them for stepping up, pay attention to them stepping up, And yeah, set the tone, be involved. So it's cool to like reap a little bit of rewards with the open source side. And I think this is true for so many things. Obviously, like Twitter, I'm always active on. So that's one that's like LiveWire is going to have a presence on Twitter because, and so I'm trying to be better about the LiveWire Twitter account and retweeting blog posts and tutorials and praise and things like that, because it incentivizes people to do more of that. It makes a community for them. In fact, recently, somebody did something and from the LiveWire account, I think I just commented and was like, nice work. And then they were like surprised. It was like a zero like tweet, a nobody kind of tweet who did something and kind of put it out there. And I retweeted it or liked it or commented, I don't remember. And they literally said like, oh, wow, that's like really cool. I need to write more of these or I need to do more. It's like, that's how you do it. You... And I mean, this is how it goes for influence in general. This happens to be marketing is like a form of influence. They share characteristics. But I've always enjoyed that thinking of like, if like there's a kid in a room and you want them out of the room, instead of saying get out of the room or pushing them out of the room, what if you held up a candy bar, you know? There's like actual good examples of this that I'm not remembering at the moment that I can't think of. But... you know, it's that idea that's like you catch more flies with honey kind of situation. And it's something that my nature, I have, I'm a slurry of negative emotions and positive emotions. So I'm not going to claim to be the most positive and optimistic person. I also have negative tendencies that are self-destructive. And one of those is criticism for people. It's when somebody is wrong in some way, my brain deems them wrong, or an action that they did is wrong. I go, that thing's wrong. I am right about them being wrong. And I may bring it up to them. I may make a joke about it to bring it up more subtly or something. I'm thinking like, I don't know, if Hannah does something and I have like criticism for it. I don't know where there's, here's what it is. If there's people around you, and this goes for teams, this goes for friends, whatever. If there's people around you that you want to be better, and let's say that you actually can deem that is that like they're bad in some way. Let's say that they are lazy, okay? And you recognize their laziness and you want them to be not lazy. There are two things you can do. You can tell them, don't be lazy. You should not be lazy. You're so lazy, you know? And it's funny because that's what my brain thinks is the right thing to do. My brain goes, you've identified a problem. You should tell that person. You know, I mean, I'm not the kind of person who just goes around like critiquing people, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, I'll have a criticism for like my brother or something. And because, you know, we're brothers and sometimes we get in fights or sometimes we just have open conversation. I'll be like, yeah, I'm lazy. This sounds like I'm just an asshole, but there are circumstances where I will criticize people, you know? And it's like, how do you respond when somebody criticizes you? Really? Even if you try really hard, you get defensive. You say they're wrong. You figure out how they're bad, you know? Where now, flip it. Let's say instead of that, I caught more flies with honey and I praised somebody for how not lazy they are. You know, have you ever met people who think you're better than you are? What do? How do you react to that? You try to meet their expectation, even if you think it's delusional. There are people in my life who, and I remember just throughout history, people who, that my mom is a great example. She thinks I'm better than I am. She thinks highly of me and to a degree that I think is a little bit not fully considered because she's my mom. And she's so sweet and I love her and that's what moms do sometimes and they're the best. But it's like, because she tells me that I am such a generous person or a stand-up person or have good character, things like that, because she tells me that she's so proud of, you know, the dad that I've become and things like that. My mom is beautiful, by the way, if you weren't catching on to that. She is so, such a beautiful person, my gosh, and I love her so dearly. And she just like tells me stuff like this because that's how like beautiful of a person she is. And what do I feel about, like, what does that do to me? It makes me be a better dad. And a more, makes me a better character. It drives me to be better because she says I'm better and she thinks I'm better. And I either want to meet that or I start convincing myself that or that, whatever, you know? It's so true. And I suck at it so bad. oh, it's so obvious how much I suck at this, because in a conversation like this, I can assert that this is a freaking fact. You catch more flies with honey. If you want somebody to be a certain way, you praise them for the little amount that they are that way. And then they will be more of that way, instead of criticizing them for not being that way enough. Because then they may be less that way. They'll at least be mad at you, and they'll find out how you suck, and then your relationship will deteriorate. This is the problem. And this is something that is, oh my gosh, we're going here. This is a trap, I think. I think this is a trap. I think there's an idea when you're in a leadership position, when you are hiring somebody, there's an idea that I'm paying you to do a job. I will identify areas where you don't do the job as well as I want you to do the job, right? And because I'm paying you, you are kind of not a robot, but you know, I get to tell you when you're not doing good enough so that you do better, right? And I should be able to openly criticize you. I should be able to tell you if I think there's something wrong, or if I think you should have done something better, I should be able to just tell you that, you know? And that would be great in a perfect world. And I do operate under that thinking personally. But just thinking through this right now, it's like, maybe that's not the case. Maybe that's a delusion. Maybe it's a delusion that people understand those, the parameters of the relationship being purely business, that they shed their defensive mechanisms and their emotional attachment to you being fond of them and thinking well of them and respecting them, that they can just disconnect all of that. And different people can do that to different degrees. And it's a talent when you're good at doing that. But I'll say the average person flies somewhere in the middle and doesn't always do well at that. So as a manager, as a leader, as an employer, you can encourage. I'm thinking about the best employer I've ever had in my entire life. And it is my father-in-law. He is freaking awesome. We have a lot of good parents. There's a lot of good people in my life. I'm very grateful for that. The summer camp that you've heard me talk about that I worked at for years, this place really was special, like very special, not an average situation. And anybody who's worked there will tell you this. And they will all say that the reason it's so special is because of Sam Richbart, my father-in-law, my wife's dad. He made it special. He set this tone for the entire organization that everybody wanted to get behind in a big way. He inspired you to be better. And he saw the goodness in you. He is the person to see the goodness in you. And you want to be good because Sam already thinks you're good. You know, there's also some deep religious things here also. Like, forget even the mechanics of religion or like if God exists or not or whatever. One of the good undertones of Christianity is this idea that God loves you for who you are, you know? Because God already loves you for who you are. You don't need to change or be better. And it's just that feeling of unconditional love, you know? And so it really is a beautiful thing. And I think it results in beautiful effects. And so Sam Richbart, leader of Camp Hickory Hill, and obviously we're meandering since where we started here, but I think we're still kind of on the right track because this is still about setting the tone for an organization. Sam set the tone for camp in such a deep way. When I first met my father-in-law, Sam, I was at a church thing and he was at a booth for camp. So he's the leader of this camp. There's tons of employees. It's a big thing. And he's the guy there. Somebody else could have been there, but no, he's the guy there. And he's at a booth at some Pinewood Derby race or something, recruiting kids by showing them pictures of zip lines and rock walls and archery and stuff. And I talked to him briefly and he just, I don't know. He has a way. About him, just unbelievably genuine. And the next year, an entire year later, I did not see this man, but he asked me my name last time. And then a year later, at this event again that I was at, talked to him, and he said, Caleb. And I was floored. I was like, what? I'll never forget this. He remembered my name a year later from a single conversation we had. How nutty is that? That is like, so this is one of those things. I could list you so many of expert level leadership qualities because of Sam. And one of them is learn everybody's name. And now that he's my father-in-law, we're friends. We've do stuff together. I see him fairly often. We've hiked for hours and hours on end. We talk, like, I know him very well. So I, and in a candid way, and I can just ask him, like, are you natural at remembering people's names? And he says, no, I have to try really hard at it, but I know how important it is and how it makes people just feel like they matter. And it's like, oh my, the guy's freaking beautiful. And he knows like every camper's name. It's bizarre. You know, there's like, what, 150 campers a week or something? Between like 80 and 150 campers a week. And he remembers their names year to year most times. And their parents' names when they drop them off. It is crazy. There's so many things like this. At camp, it is exhausting. Every day is so packed full. And then you have to wake up the next morning. And if you're a leader, leaders wake up before their campers wake up. One of the cabin leaders stays in the cabin so that the campers aren't left alone. And then, or maybe it's like they, I don't know, whatever it is. There's people on patrol so the kids aren't left alone. But all the leaders go to what's called leaders huddle every morning before the kids get up. So you go to bed after your kids go down and you get up before they get up. So you're like already, you know, do up and at them, you know? Sam is the last one to go to bed. And he is the first one up. He is a freaking robot. We'd call him a robot. And he's there bright and early. He's showered. He looks sharp. And he is down at the pavilion. And as you walk down, you have coffee. You go to the dining hall and you get coffee and you're groggy. You're so groggy. And you walk down to the pavilion where you're about to have leaders huddle for the day. And he says, "Morning, Caleb." And you say, "Morning, Sam." He does it every morning to every staff member. He says, "Morning." And he says your name. And you feel so valued. And there's so many staff members. And even the smallest, newest of people get a "morning something." And you're like, oh my gosh, he's so happy all the time. It's true. He really is happy basically all the time. And he is unbelievably selfless and has taught me the value of selfless leadership. And anything he's asking anybody to do, he is either willing to do himself or is already doing himself. He's setting the tone at the deepest level for excellence. And this is actually one of the like the sayings at camp that he instills, like, everything we do is with excellence, humility, and love. That's the thing. It's always with excellence, humility, and love. Everything we're doing, we're making sure our bathrooms are better kept than any other camp bathroom because we're doing things with excellence. And we're making sure that the things we do with excellence, we're not bragging about. And we're not doing them for the glory of doing them. We're doing them in a humble way filled with humility and then love. Everything is, you know, loving each other, loving God. It's a Christian camp, you know. So anyway, I could talk for hours about the selfless, unbelievable leadership of Sam Richbart. And I'm telling you, it's not a fairy tale. He really is this person. And anybody who has crossed paths with him, which is hundreds, thousands of people, would say the exact same thing. And I get to call him father-in-law, which is so freaking cool. Thanks, Sam, for that. Thanks, Hannah, for that. Anyway, this has been a long one, I imagine. I'm not even looking at the time. But I came here to say that setting the tone, being the change that you want to see, if you want your organization, if you want pull requests to be high quality, you got to make high quality pull requests yourself. If you want people to communicate clearly, you need to communicate clearly yourself. If you want there to be a thriving community, you need to engage in that community. If you want people to be nice in that community, you be nice in that community. I mean, these are the golden rules, and not easily done, but it's always a goal. I'll see you.